hello. Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm your host, Stephanie Kiven, and my guest today is Dr. R. Mark Ehrlichman. Dr. Ehrlichman, MD, is director of the Urogynecology Division in the Institute for Gynecologic Care at Mercy Medical Center. Dr. Ehrlichman has expertise in urogynecology with a focus in urinary incontinence and pelvic floor dysfunction. He is a fellow of the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology and is board certified in obstetrics and gynecology. Dr. has earned his medical degree from Dartmouth Medical School and completed his obstetrics and gynecology residency at Maine Medical Center in Portland, Maine, where he served as administrative chief resident. He completed his urogynecology and reconstructive pelvic surgery fellowship at the Greater Baltimore Medical Center. Dr. Ehrlichman has extensive training in minimally invasive robotic and laparoscopic surgery. He's been involved in clinical research, most specifically regarding urinary incontinence and pelvic floor dysfunction. As an author of numerous publications, Dr. Ehrlichman has served as a reviewer for the Journal of Pelvic Medicine and Surgery, Obstetrics and Gynecology, and International Urogynecology Journal and Pelvic Floor Dysfunction. He is the recipient of numerous awards and honors and a member of the American Medical Association, American Urogynecologic Society, Association of Professors in Gynecology and Obstetrics, and International Urogynecology Association. He has served on the board of the American Urogynecologic Society. Welcome to Baltimore and Internet Radio, Dr. Ehrlichman. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. And could you just give us a little bio in your own words? I've just, you know, given your beautiful portfolio, but maybe a little more personal information about you.
Well, thank you for that extensive introduction. I did do my training up in New England and came down to complete a three-year fellowship here at the Greater Baltimore Medical Center in conjunction with Johns Hopkins, which I started in 1998 and finished in 2001. And as fate would have it, I stayed on at Greater Baltimore Medical Center, ultimately heading up the Division of Urogynecology at that institution, and before I left almost 3 years ago to Mercy Medical Center, where I am now at the Weinberg Center for Women's Health and Medicine.
Now that's fantastic. So do you have a family?
I do have a family. I have a wife who's a physician who practices in alternative and holistic medicine, but she's an MD and she has her own practice, private practice in Cockeysville.
Oh, that's great.
And I have a 12-year-old daughter. We live in the county.
Very nice. So your 12-year-old daughter probably will soon, too, one day be a doctor.
Well, I don't know. We'll see how things pan out.
You won't put that pressure on her.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so I'm curious how this field of obstetrics, gynecology, and pelvic floor dysfunction and all that, how that came into your life.
Well, you know, it came in because problems with pelvic floor dysfunction, which are basically related to problems such as pelvic support and urinary and fecal incontinence and pelvic pain and painful bladder, they all are so prevalent and yet so poorly discussed.
Right.
And our field, which I should note has now become a board recognized subspecialty, as you know, within obstetrics and gynecology, there have traditionally been several subspecialties, GYN oncology, reproductive endocrinology, and maternal fetal medicine, or high-risk obstetrics. And as of this past year, the American Board has recognized female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery as yet another subspecialty.
Which is amazing, because now I've been out of school for a lot of years. But that was not a subspecialty while I was in school.
Right, and it's very, very, very new.
It speaks a lot to the need that there's actually a subspecialty. So
exactly.
Tell us a little bit, for those who don't know, tell us about urinary incontinence. And is the pelvic floor dysfunction primarily for women who are looking to conceive or, you know, that kind of stuff?
Well, so talking about urinary incontinence, you know, it affects almost half of the women in the United States. It's a very common disorder, and estimates suggest that the prevalence prevalence of urinary incontinence gradually rises during the young adult life and typically comes to a broad plateau in middle age and then steadily increases from that plateau after the age of 65. So, you know, given that over the next 40 years, as the elderly population expands in size in this country, the number of women affected by urinary incontinence will significantly grow. So it's a very prevalent problem and one that, as I mentioned earlier, has not been readily discussed. I think healthcare providers traditionally have done a very poor job of screening and asking patients about this condition. And conversely, patients, quite honestly, have often been afraid to mention it. They've been embarrassed or they feel that nothing can be done. And really, that's quite contrary to the truth. Yeah.
So it's very interesting that you say that, because as I was leaving, I work at my kid's school, but as I was leaving the school, I mentioned I was interviewing you. And the woman said to me, "Oh, I would never tell my doctor that." So I said,
right,
"Well, do you have it?" And she said, "I do, but I never mention it." So how would you treat, let's start with incontinence and then we'll move to the dysfunction, but how would you treat urinary incontinence, like from, you know, minor to major?
Right. Well, it, you know, it's all in the eye of the beholder, and what may be very disturbing to a young 20-year-old may not be that disturbing to an older woman or vice versa. And so really it comes down to the to a problem that is bothersome. If it's not bothersome, then obviously no treatment is needed. But I think it's important first to distinguish between the types of incontinence and to really clarify that. Urinary incontinence in and of itself is defined as the complaint of involuntary loss of urine.
Okay.
And it can be subdivided, as you know, into stress urinary incontinence, or overactive bladder, mm-hmm. urge incontinence, or if it's both conditions, we call that mixed incontinence. Stress incontinence is the complaint of involuntary loss of urine on effort or physical exertion. So that's classically described, you know, doctor, I leak urine when I cough, sneeze, strain, when I jump on the trampoline. Exactly,
right.
I exercise. I'm in my step aerobics class, I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm needing to wear pads, and this is very distressing for me. So that's sort of the classic scenario for stress urinary incontinence. In contrast, urge urinary incontinence is the involuntary loss of urine associated with urgency, and it fits into this diagnosis or the symptom complex we refer to as overactive bladder. So overactive bladder is defined as urinary urgency and or frequency and or nocturia, that is getting up at night, and or urge-related leakage. So the classic description there is, you know, doctor, I'm coming home, I have groceries in one hand, I put the key in the front door, and, you know, I have this sudden urge to go, and sometimes I make it and sometimes I don't. And urge incontinence is where the bladder is contracting and forcing urine out without our being able to control it,
right,
or to suppress that urge. And then finally, the presence of both stress incontinence and overactive bladder is known as mixed incontinence. And what we know is that stress and urge symptoms are often present together. And in fact, anywhere from 10 to 30% of women with stress incontinence are found to have bladder overactivity subsequently.
So, which is a treatable physical ailment. Yep. I mean, the overactive bladder in most cases.
Right. So they're both certainly treatable to varying degrees. The way to think about stress incontinence, that is how it comes about, is that it's a support problem. It's or I should say the loss of support underneath the bladder neck. And it's that downward mobility of the bladder neck with increases in intra-abdominal pressure, such as when a woman coughs, pressures exerted on the pelvic floor, on the bladder neck. And if there's not good support underneath the bladder neck, then urine is going to leak. Okay. So
right,
that's an anatomical problem. In contrast, overactive bladder, as the title suggests, is more of a problem of the nerve. That is, the bladder is overactive. It's, it's contracting when you don't want it to and you can't control it. And it actually relates back, you know, when we're children, when we're infants, we have no control over the bladder. The bladder fills, it gets to a certain point, a reflex goes to the spinal cord, and the spinal cord sends a reflex back for the bladder to empty. But then we become potty trained. We learn how to suppress that reflex, just like you can suppress your knee jerking up if your doctor hits it with a reflex hammer.
Right.
And we learn to suppress that urge. Unfortunately, as we get older, and this is true for men and women, not just women, as we sort of hit midlife, overactive bladder becomes more of a problem. And as I mentioned before, very prevalent one.
Well, now that makes me feel a little better that it's just not a woman's problem.
That's right.
As a woman who may or may not, I won't give it all up, but a woman who may or not be experienced some of the things you mentioned.
Right.
But so in old school, there was the bladder tuck. And is that something that they still do? You know, where, like you said, the neck of the bladder was pinched in a
right.
little bit. Is that still
right.
something that...
Yeah, so I can't tell you how many women come and say, you know, I had a bladder tuck or
right.
a bladder something done down
you
there.
You cringe because I'm sure that's not the right terminology now.
Yeah, not the right terminology and certainly not the right thing to do. So usually bladder tucks are referring to surgeries that were done, hopefully done for prolapse. That means something falling out, and we'll talk about that shortly. But in general, the treatment for both stress and urge incontinence, if we talk about sort of general treatment, treatments, the first line for both conditions that should be recommended is conservative therapy. That is conservative behavioral lifestyle interventions that may be helpful. So, for example, for stress incontinence, the first line therapy that should be recommended is pelvic floor muscle training. So we've all heard of Dr. Kegel and the Kegel exercises. And certainly there is literature to support that pelvic muscle training can be quite effective,
right.
quite useful. Typically, it's more useful for younger women with stress incontinence. They tend to benefit the most. And what we know is from other interventions, such as helping to retrain the bladder and avoiding certain things in the diet that may irritate the bladder.
Is it as simple as maybe not drinking before you go to bed or you don't drink
right.
fluid
exactly.
intake? Yeah.
Exactly. So fluid intake, you know, fluid management, retraining, getting to the bathroom on a timely fashion, not waiting to the last minute, can be highly effective and result in up to 50% reduction in weekly incontinent episodes. So for stress incontinence, it tends to be pelvic muscle training. For overactive bladder, it tends to be avoidance of bladder irritants like caffeine, chocolate, artificial sweeteners.
Well, all of our favorites.
I know. It's
chocolate.
Terrible.
It's terrible. So before we move on to the next one, though, I want to talk a little bit about the pelvic floor dysfunction, and hopefully the urinary incontinence will come back to me.
Okay.
So tell me a little bit, so to speak. So tell me a little bit about pelvic floor dysfunction.
Well, so pelvic floor dysfunction is sort of an overall term, Stephanie, for a multitude of different problems. So it can encompass pelvic organ prolapse, where women have lost support of the pelvic organs and may experience a bulge or pressure in the vagina or something protruding out of the vagina. It can include conditions such as urinary incontinence or fecal incontinence or pelvic pain or painful intercourse. Or painful bladder, or trouble emptying the bladder, so voiding dysfunction or defecatory dysfunction, otherwise, you know, trouble moving one's bowels. So it's sort of a general term, pelvic, any sort of dysfunction related to the pelvic floor. So in general, what I see on a daily basis is not just urinary incontinence, but also pelvic organ prolapse. And the way I try and graphically describe pelvic organ prolapse to patients is, you know, imagine the vagina sort of like a tunnel. And if you and I were looking into the tunnel from the outside, you have the ceiling of the tunnel with the bladder resting on it like a big balloon. You have the floor of the tunnel with the rectum running underneath it okay, like a pipe. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the tunnel up inside is where the cervix is, part of the uterus. Any of those areas, the ceiling of the tunnel can lose its support, the rafters can start to sag, if you will, and the bladder can push down and bulge out. If the floorboards are weak, the rectum pushes up and causes a bulge. We call that a rectocele. If the bladder is pushing down on the ceiling, we call that a cystocele. And if the uterus has lost its support, it can sort of come down the tunnel towards us and ultimately even push out. And we call that uterine prolapse. So different degrees of prolapse can have associated symptoms with them.
And so typically you're having a problem, if you're a woman and you're having a problem and you go to your gynecologist. The gynecologist would then refer a patient to you if they see that there's some pelvic floor dysfunction I think gynecology is I think your fields must be going beyond just the typical pap smear and, you know, yearly exam.
Right, because I think, you know, in all fairness, many gynecologists can treat prolapse, but the degree to which they feel comfortable treating prolapse is varied. And so the old bladder tucks of days...
A long time ago, Dr. Ellison.
Well, we know they don't really work. Right. They don't stop. That's why we see patients who say, you know, I had that done once. It never worked. I was told that these surgeries don't work. Well, some of the old surgeries don't work. That's absolutely right. But some of what we're doing nowadays, actually, we have a real wealth of evidence-based medicine now. And in our field, there is a lot of research and a lot of clinical trials figuring out truly what does work and what doesn't.
Right.
And I think that's where some general GYNs may be challenged in the sense that they see a big prolapse, they see something, and they really don't know how to best manage it. And I think that's where urogynecologists now really, as a subspecialty and having just recently passed the first set of written exams given in this field, you know, sort of... sets us apart in terms of what we do. It's just like anything, you know, if you're going to have your shoulder surgery done, you want to go to the physician.
The best shoulder guy.
Guy or the gal who's doing, you know, 10 shoulders a week, not the person doing one a year. And I think the same is true for reconstructive pelvic surgery. You want to make sure that whoever you're seeing is well-versed not just in surgical technique, but in all the options, because surgery may not be the first option or the first thing that you should be counseled in all your choices. You know, I tell patients in general, in my line of work, there's always three choices, usually. Do nothing. You're not going to die from prolapse or from urinary incontinence, okay? It's not cancer. So you could opt to do nothing. You could opt to use a pessary, which you may recall is something that can go in the vagina like a diaphragm to hold up prolapse, or you can have surgery. Okay, so there's three options, really, and I think that those options need to be shared with each and every patient, and you shouldn't just say, well, you know, your uterus is falling out, you've got to have surgery.
Well, I must tell you that you've now put me into this new, as a formerly trained gynecologist, I'm very interested in getting people to know that you're out there, that there is such a subspecialty. Because, again, I think most women go to their GYN and, you know, their obstetrician while they're pregnant, and they don't really, like this woman just told me before I came, she didn't want to discuss with her doctor urinary incontinence, where, honestly, I'm in my late 40s. I know lots of women around me who are suffering from that, and I wonder if they were to see a specialist, it might make it easier for them to discuss. It not just being a gynecological issue.
Exactly. Well, I think that's true. And I try and tell patients, look, if you have a problem with respect to the pelvic floor, whether it's incontinence or pelvic organ prolapse or something, go see a urogynecologist. At least get a, because we're all very similarly trained. Mm-hmm. There's a number of us here in the greater Baltimore area, not many, but a number. And I think if you went and saw one, chances are very good that you're going to get the same recommendations from each and every one of us,
right.
You know, because we're all similarly trained. We go to the same national meeting, or hopefully we're all abreast of the newest and latest techniques and treatment options.
Well, you're certainly far ahead of, I bet you, my GYN for sure.
Well,
so thank you for the background information. Now, tell me a little bit right now. You are in clinical practice, I presume.
Well, I'm in clinic, so I am the director of the Center for Urogynecology at Mercy Medical Center.
Which means what?
Well, it means that that like most of us, I wake up early and I go home late, and I see patients.
You see your patients, so that's what I wanted to get at. You are a clinician as well as a teacher.
Right. So I have residents and I have a fellow, and so I do a lot of teaching, but I also have my own clinical practice. I see patients here in Lutherville typically 2 days a week, right on York Road, and I also see patients 1 day a week downtown at Mercy Medical Center and the Weinberg Center.
Fantastic. And is Mercy, do you do any research with the Mercy, or are you looking to research?
Actually, it's funny. So I have done lots of research.
In the past, I saw that.
And we currently will be embarking on a very big, actually one of the largest clinical surgical trials that will be overseen by the FDA, looking at surgical mesh and prolapse surgery.
Wow. At Mercy?
At Mercy. So
congratulations.
Yeah, so that's a very exciting study. We'll be one of 40 sites across the country enrolling patients in a study looking at the safety efficacy, that is the value of using synthetic mesh for pelvic organ prolapse. So obviously there's a lot of news and misinformation on the television regarding meshes.
You see that with the lawyers looking to get their money. It's awful.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think it's important to know the truth about things, and of course, so this will be a study that will objectively look at outcomes, and I'm very excited about it. It should be up and running hopefully by the first of the year.
Oh, that's terrific. So, well, we look forward to that. Now, I'm afraid I've used up a lot of our time, but is there anything else you want to add besides that we pulled that out by luck, pure luck, that I asked you that, because that is really worth getting out there, that study.
In about one minute, I'll just say, you know, for urinary incontinence, there's lots of treatment options for women, ranging from what we initially talked about, conservative therapies, to surgical techniques. Bladder tucks are no longer done, but rather the mainstay are mid-urethral slings that work 90% of the time to keep a woman dry with coughing and exercising. There are medications for overactive bladder, as we all know, and if those medications don't work, there are other options, such as neuromodulation and botulinum toxin that we use in the bladder, and nerve stimulation that can be very effective as well for women who failed medical treatment for overactive bladder. And finally, with respect to pelvic organ prolapse, there are a lot of different surgical approaches, vaginal, abdominal, and laparoscopic approaches to address pelvic organ prolapse quite successfully. I do a lot of robotic surgery, laparoscopic surgery. In fact, Mercy Medical Center, I think, is the busiest robotic surgery center in this area. So there are a lot of very good surgeries out there that have very good long-term outcomes.
I know. Now, we didn't even get to touch on that, about the robotic and the laparoscopic surgery and that kind of stuff. But seeing that this is only an intro, would you consider coming back a little bit down the road and we can update and talk a little bit more about how your research is progressing and about those fabulous techniques at Mercy?
Absolutely. Love to.
That would be my pleasure. Terrific. Well, I'm going to say thank you to the Baltimore Internet Radio listeners. This is Stephanie Given with Dr. Mark Ehrlichman. Thank you so much for listening.
Good. Thank you, Stephanie.